It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Please remain standing for our national anthem, sung by the United States Military and Naval Academy Glee Clubs.
Sandy Rios with you. I just wanted to start with a really strong reminder that there is so much of this country that's still alive and vital and worth fighting for. That was a group of young people from the Army and the Navy at the football game on Saturday in Philadelphia. The president was on the field standing next to General James Mattis. And as the president took the field, there was enormous response, standing ovation. And I know that had to have been encouraging to him. But the most important thing, apart from that, that we have young people who still love this country enough to go into full-time service for it and to die for it. Our military branches have become the battleground to remove Christianity from and our history, because the history of this country is so woven into preparation for officer training, military strategy, the history of the country, love of God. It's just like almost inseparable. The hymns, the Navy hymns, the Army Air Force hymns. When you're in Washington, you hear these groups singing, and they still sing these traditional songs. Even now at Christmas, they're performing traditional Christmas music. The military so far has not been overcome, although it's been damaged by the anti-God groups. And that's why I thought it was pretty moving when the chaplain, a Navy veteran, the chaplain took the field on Saturday to pray. I can't find his name, but here it is. You're going to hear his prayer. I just thought it would be good for all of us to hear it. Let's do that.
God of wonders, some wonder why we pray for a football game. So I tell them, in this game, every player on the field is willing to die for every person watching. And there is no greater love than to lay down one's life for what's truly good. And so, God, I do pray for these players on this field and all the good they represent. Their fellow cadets and midshipmen, soldiers, sailors, Marines, firefighters, first responders, police, and countless others who lay down their lives daily in our defense. Because in your eyes, O God, it is not the critic who counts, but those who actually step into the arena. And so, Almighty God, we who are willing to die for others, we salute you. Let this game begin. Amen.
All right, that was military chaplain Matthew Pawlikowski. And I just wanted you to hear that. That's still very much, that's the thing that's not making national news, you know. It's not the headlines, that people still really do love this country and are willing to die for it. And more importantly than that, still are acknowledging God in the public arena. Thank God for that. All right, well, the big news last week, of course, was that, among other things, that former FBI Director James Comey testified before two committees in the House before the Republicans lose control of the House, in which all of these investigations are going to be disintegrated, no doubt. So James Comey initially wasn't going to go before Congress, but then he was persuaded by his attorneys to do that. But then, of course, what happened was his attorneys got him to say he didn't know 156 times, he didn't remember 72 times, and I don't recall 8 times. Catherine Herridge reported on it on Friday. Let's listen.
When you read the transcript, you will see that we're talking again about Hillary Clinton's emails, for heaven's sake, so I'm not sure we need to do this at all. But I'm trying to respect the institution and to answer questions in a respectful way. You'll see I did that in the transcript.
Republicans said the private interview under oath is designed to drill down on the FBI's actions during the 2016 election, when both campaigns were under federal investigation, including contacts between former top Justice Department official Bruce Orr and the man behind the infamous Trump dossier.
We learned from Bruce Orr that Christopher Steele had told him he was desperate to stop President Trump from being president. I want to know when James Comey knew that.
Democrats say the goal is to damage the special counsel and promise to shut down the House GOP investigation when they take over the majority in coming weeks.
It's a waste of time to start with. The entire purpose of this investigation is to get us urgent in the real investigation, which is wrong.
Just 2 hours into the session, a senior committee Republican cried foul, claiming a government lawyer shut down key questions.
Director Comey is in there with two attorneys. I would say at his gleeful acceptance, instructed that he will not be answering a great many questions that are clearly items at the core of our investigations.
But House Democrats say little of note was learned from today's private session.
It's just been a wild goose chase. It's been a rerun of the same questions and answers through multiple interviews. I like TV reruns, but this is getting a little ridiculous.
What reporters were told is that we do expect him back up here for another session of this transcribed under oath interview in about 2 weeks' time.
I think one of the things that's notable about that interview that he had with those two committees, besides the fact that he said he couldn't remember, he didn't know, you know, just amazing amounts of time, was his gleeful. He was very gleeful about it all. I think you heard Daryl Issa kind of indicate that in his comments a few minutes ago. In terms of just the meat of it, it looks as though the FBI, former FBI director, admitted under oath that the Steele dossier, which was used to accuse President Trump of colluding with the Russians, which was used to surveil members of his campaign, however loosely involved they were, to go after Michael Flynn, was unverified. They didn't even know if it was true. And this comes out repeatedly, over and over again. He admits, you know, way into the investigation, they still didn't know if there was any evidence for collusion. By the way, there still is no evidence for collusion. Think about this. The head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation took it upon himself to illegally surveil, based on a phony evidence, which is never presented to the FISA court. As we have said many times before, that kind of evidence has to be rock solid. They don't go in there and ask for the kinds of warrants that are asked for in the FISA court on flimsy evidence. They don't. And yet, straight-faced, the FBI, former FBI director, goes in and tells these committees that that dossier was, oh, yes, I guess it was unverified, and it's still not verified. And yet, they used it. And so, he was asked, did you then or do you now have any concerns about the process that occurred around the Carter Page FISA? In other words, false information, unverified information being delivered in order to surveil a person allegedly with a campaign of an incoming president? I do not, he replied. And so that's one of the many things that he admitted to. Plus, this is really stunning to me. When he met with President Trump on one occasion, and of course he famously kept notes because, you know, he had to do that because Trump was so dangerous. Sounds to me like James Comey was the dangerous one, but he had a memo in his that he kept behind that he did not give to Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Before Sessions recused himself, when the Justice Department was actively investigating all of this, he held on to a memo. And then the memo, the stuff of the memo is so thin. The president had told him in this meeting, "I hope you can let this go," in regard to the Flynn investigation. "I hope you can let this go." That's the incriminating, damning thing that President Donald Trump said about the Flynn investigation. And of course, Comey was hoping that that would be used for obstruction of justice. And so when he was asked why he didn't tell the Justice Department about it, by the way, the Justice Department is over the FBI. The FBI is a branch of it. The Attorney General is his boss. He said, "We agreed that we ought to hold it very close, not brief the investigative team at this point, and not go over and talk to the leadership of the Department of Justice to hold on to it until we got a new Deputy Attorney General and they sorted out how they were going to supervise the Russia investigation." And, of course, the new deputy was Rosenstein. And, of course, General Sessions had not recused himself at that point. So how did he know that General Sessions might recuse himself? Did you know? Did any of us know about this? No. And how did he know that he was waiting for this new deputy attorney general, who just happened now to be Rosenstein, who is a friend of Comey's and a friend of Mueller's? It's just so sick. And yet James Comey is the champion in all this. He's just... such a gentleman. He feels he's doing things that are beyond reproach. Well, I know that others don't agree with that. Jim Jordan, for one, let's listen to clip three.
245 times he says, "Don't remember, don't recall, and don't know." What was most, I guess, the biggest takeaway for me was the "don't know" part. Specifically, he didn't know much about Christopher Steele, the guy who they used his work product, the dossier, to go get the warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. He didn't know, he never met Chris Steele. Didn't know the relationship that Christopher Steele had with Bruce Ohr, specifically that Christopher Steele was passing information to Bruce Ohr, who was then giving it to the FBI. Didn't know that Christopher Steele was terminated for talking to the press. Didn't know he had talked to the press. Didn't know they continued to work with Christopher Steele after he had been terminated and continued to get his information. So I was mostly struck by that. Here's the key player, the guy who put together the dossier that was the basis for getting the warrant. And you didn't know anything about him? I find that hard to believe, but that was those were his answers yesterday. Remember, on January 6th of 2017, he goes to New York and briefs President-elect Trump about the salacious and unverified dossier. So he thinks it's important enough to brief the president-elect, but yet he doesn't know anything about the guy who wrote it. Doesn't know that, for example, Christopher Steele told Bruce Ohr, who then told the FBI that Christopher Steele had said he was desperate to stop Trump from being president. That was what Bruce Ohr conveyed to the FBI. He doesn't know any of that information, but yet he's going to brief the president-elect about this. And as we know, what happened after that meeting on January 6th in New York, it was quickly leaked. CNN and BuzzFeed all then printed the entire dossier for the public to see. So that to me was hard to figure out. Like, how did you not know this anything about the guy who was your main source for this whole thing?
All right, so that's Judge Jeanine. That was her show, and so we just didn't get her comments. We just got Jim Jordan's, but you can see that Jim is pretty hot about this, and I don't blame him. There's a great article, which I had hoped to read to you. I'm not sure I'm going to have time, but I want to commend it to you. It's called "Why Michael Flynn Was Set Up," and of course, James Comey was in the center of that, and I want to read just a portion of it. In case you didn't know, wrong side of history is liberal speak for unhelpful to the progressive globalist agenda. To be on the wrong side of history is to be on the wrong side of the army of liberal sycophants who populate the federal government, especially intelligence agencies. Because this shadow government hates transparency and loathes disruptive forces like Donald J. Trump, many lives associated with him have now been ruined. If you're on the right side of history, you get to lie to Congress, to lie to the FBI, leak like a sieve, and be guilty of campaign finance violations and Logan Act violations with few, if any, consequences. If you're on the wrong side, you get the book thrown at you. Suddenly, policy disagreements and gossiping about Hillary Clinton's email become crimes. If I have a chance, I'll come back to this, but we're going to put it on our Facebook page. It's written by Deborah Hine, "Why Michael Flynn Was Set Up." And we'll come back at some point. I'll talk about that. But coming up next, a story breaking out of Virginia that we have to get in. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. 2019 is upon us, and we're going to be going back to Washington, D.C. and to Williamsburg for our spiritual heritage tours. And if you've been wanting to go, maybe this is the year for you. These tours fill up several months in advance. And one of the reasons they do is because we have an actual historian, a professional historian that comes on our tour with us. His name is Stephen McDowell. He's the president of the Providence Foundation, and he knows more about early American history, especially the Christian influence on early American history. He knows more than anybody I know. So, if you want to go with us, you can find out more information at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's in June and September. Pick the month you want to go. Find out more information at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
So the head of the Democratic National Committee says he has a problem with people who go to church, watch Fox News, and own a gun. He says all of us who follow the teachings of Jesus Christ vote Republican because we buy into what we hear from the pulpit and the television set, as if we've been brainwashed. Well, there's a reason why so many evangelicals vote Republican. We like lawmakers who don't try to redefine what God defined in the first place. We refuse to support politicians that want to punish people who try to live out their religious beliefs. And most importantly, we refuse to support a party that enables the killing of unborn babies. It's really not a surprise that the DNC has a problem with God. In 2012, they actually booed the Almighty at their national convention. Democrats seem to believe man was created in their image. So now you understand why DNC leadership acts like a bunch of no-account heathens who don't have the sense God gave a goose. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio. Everybody.
French teacher Peter Vlaming is now out of a job. All 5 school board members followed the superintendent's recommendation that Vlaming be terminated.
Miracles can happen, but I was prepared that this might be the outcome.
This after Vlaming said he would not address a transgender student with their preferred male pronouns. He says he loves all his students, including this one, but it's against his Christian religious beliefs to call a transgender student he instead of she.
My religious faith dictates that I am to love and respect everyone, whether I agree with them or not, because we are all made in God's image. I am also aware of and agree with speech limits that are placed on public school teachers concerning matters of religious faith.
The school division says Mr. Vlaming repeatedly refused to comply with the adopted school board non-discrimination and non-harassment policies. Vlaming slipped up a few times and accidentally used female pronouns instead of preferred male pronouns.
I can't think of a worse way to treat a child than what was happening. That was very threatening.
Vlaming's attorney says the school division's policies are unconstitutional and not clear when it comes to gender identity.
And they decided on their own, what does it mean to discriminate based on gender identity? Even the own law that they described as a law, but it was actually an outdated Department of Education letter, said that harassment required intent to harass, actually ill intent.
Vlaming's attorney tells me they have 10 days to appeal. After that appeal, they said they're open to all options, even taking this case to federal court. Reporting live tonight in West Point, Sierra Fox, 8 News.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. So that happened on just a few days ago. It happened in Richmond, Virginia, and you heard the story. I've asked Victoria Cobb to join us this morning. Victoria is the president of the Virginia Family Foundation. They've been very involved since this has happened. And Victoria, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Victoria, were you at that meeting?
We had our team there. I actually had another meeting, but our team was in place. And I'll tell you, we also were thrilled to be able to really raise support for this teacher. We were able to notify the community and just people who were sympathetic to the idea that non-speech, which is really what this is, his unwillingness to certain pronouns could result in someone's termination. And so hundreds went to that hearing. Unfortunately, only about 50 were allowed in the room. So we had, you know, and so many students, just the amazing number of students who sat in the hallway for hours while this hearing took place.
All right, let's break it down a little bit. What can you tell us about Peter Vlaming? He's a French teacher. What can you tell us about him?
Well, the thing is that he is a beloved teacher who had a perfect, nothing on his employment record. He'd been there 6.5 years. And he's simply a teacher who was trying to both respect the student and the student's desires and also abide by his deeply held religious beliefs, that this was not object reality, that this was something that he needed to hold to. And so he attempted to strike what I think would be a very appropriate balance, which is to call the student by their name, their preferred name, but not use pronouns that seem to indicate a specific gender.
So let's be clear about this. This was a biological male who wants to be a female, but hasn't gone through transition, correct?
It's a biological female who wants to be a male, yes, but has not gone through any transition at all.
All right, okay.
So the child was using a new name, and he was willing to use that new name, but was unwilling to say that this biological girl was unwilling to use the word he.
So it was the absence of what he said. And, of course, they used that Obama memo, which was issued right before, it was like the last year or so before President Obama went out of office. They forced school districts around the country to implement transgender policies of various kinds, and part of it was this. But that was, of course, rescinded by Betsy DeVos as the new Secretary of Education. So, Victoria, I don't quite understand what legal ground they have to dismiss him. Do you?
Well, this is it's really an amazing story, and I suspect we will, in fact, see this go through court because the legal ground is so shaky is a favorable word to use. To start with, the school board passed one of these sexual orientation, gender identity, non-discrimination statements, so it always starts there. We remind people of that all the time because they sound so benign, but in reality, this is how they play out. So the school board had passed one of those statements, had not in any way sort of done a good job clarifying, well, what does that mean and what does one have to do? Then when this incident occurred and the administration determined that his unwillingness to use pronouns was not sufficient in their minds, you're exactly right. They also handed him this rescinded Obama-era policy. It was rescinded because it was so flawed. And, it's just, it's just amazing to me that, and they did not tell him that it was rescinded, by the way. It's actually, it came out during this hearing. The attorney made the point that even on the exact website where they went to pull this rescinded policy, if she had handed the teacher everything on that page, it would have said that it was rescinded. So it's a little bit alarming that we have that kind of behavior being used to dismiss a teacher.
Well, and so you have a, my understanding is you have a superintendent of schools named Laura Abel, who is all about this. She wants him out. She says that the student felt disrespected. And so you have a small board, right? It's not a very big group. And they all, after 5 hours of hearings, they all went along with this. Well, I mean, I should ask you, what kind of discussion took place in that room? What does your team say about that? Were people defending him or criticizing him for 5 hours? What did they talk about?
It was amazing. We were actually a little floored that this was a five-hour public hearing with live streaming on the news. And I mean, it was kind of an amazing thing to think about a little town going through this. And yes, there's only five members of the school board. But you have to remember, you know, the school board is who put the first policy, you know, who added sexual orientation and gender identity. So clearly they're headed in a direction already. And then you have an administration that clearly wanted this teacher out. And so it was very interesting. I mean, honestly, if you listen to that hearing, there's just no way, if you didn't walk in with a predetermined outcome, you would walk out and fire this teacher. They had student after student tell him that they absolutely tell the hearing that this teacher had been very respectful to everyone, including people who were in, you know, a student who was in the class with the student in question. The only incident they could point to that was a use of pronouns was when this teacher was doing an exercise where people pair up and one student is blindfolded and the other student has to guide them. And unfortunately, because the partner wasn't looking, they were about to run into a wall, and the teacher did say, use the word her. But what's clear about the hearing, though, is although he one time used her, trying to prevent her from not having a run-in with a wall, what was clear, though, was he was actually fired for his unwillingness to use the alternate pronouns. That's actually what's at issue, because it wasn't simply the slip-up. And what's ironic is the administration, in their hearing, in their testimony, actually slipped up multiple times during the hearing.
Oh, isn't that something? I mean, it's how ridiculous.
It tells you the confusion level.
Yeah, well, and you know, okay, there are two things that come to my mind. First of all, this pattern of school boards being stacked and administration, superintendents, professional educators wielding the hammer at parents and students and getting their way has been happening, honestly, Victoria, since my son was in school. I was stunned the first time I saw it happen. So they have really crafted this. This is like a model of what's happening in school boards around the country. The people, you know, people are busy and they don't have time to run for school board. And so people are recruited and they do, you know, they cooperate. And they have forced upon American students and their parents the most wicked kinds of things, whether it's reading lists, you know, that contain graphic, horrific information, to school practices, to bringing in, initially, a long time ago, you know, it was people describing their lesbian lifestyle to a group of kids or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's been happening now for decades, and this is just the latest manifestation. But it's pretty shocking. This is like third world country dictatorship when parents and students say defend and there's no real legal reason to fire, and yet they do it anyway. And we all stand back and go, gee, what just happened? And as I understand it, this Peter Flaming he's not that old. He's got like four children?
Yeah, four small children, and now he's been forced out of a job. And it is unfortunate that those who claim tolerance the loudest want to punish anyone who exercises any kind of personally held belief that don't align with their political agenda. And that's what you're talking about, whether it's in curriculum or whether it's in this scenario where they're trying to force compelled speech. And that's why it does remind us, and that's why you do bring up sort of this, it feels like a whole other country, because in America, we don't think of ourselves, and certainly not in Virginia, as a place of compelled speech.
Yeah, well, this is the new day. This is the new world. This is the transformation of America that one famous president claimed he was going to seek. And I want to mention also, this is not an isolated incident. And listen, I'm furious, and we have to do something about this. We can't just yawn our way through this. I want to say there was a math teacher named Joshua Sutcliffe in Oxford Secondary School in England. He allegedly said, "Well done, girls," to two students, one of whom was transgender. He was suspended for 6 weeks before being fired, and that was December of 2017. Now, here's another story. This is coming out of Britain also. A professor, and this is in university, Professor Rosa Friedman, University of Reading, fears for her safety after she discussed a government program to help people who want to change their gender. She faced online abuse, telephone threats, and in the middle of the night, her office door was covered in urine. She expressed opposition to self-identification, the concept that people can choose their gender. She's also attended debates on the nation's Gender Recognition Act, which supports gender identity. She's been called a Nazi. She's been told she should be raped. She says, "I'm being told I'm a Nazi. I'm being told I'm transphobic. None of these are pleasant." She has organized an event, or gone to an event organized by Women's Place, and at that event, she was followed by a group of students. She had to hide in the bushes because she felt threatened. There were men there. They were harassing her. And, of course, the threats to her have included rape and murder. I expand on that because I just want to show how draconian, wicked, evil, dangerous this new movement, this new manifestation of the LGBT rights movement has become. Victoria, tell us about West Point High School. I mean, is that the name of a town, or is that anything way connected to the academy? Or what's the story there?
Yeah, it is a town. It's kind of between Richmond and Williamsburg is the easiest way to describe it, kind of close to Williamsburg. And it isn't the place you would expect this kind of a battle. But I think we're finding that these are popping up everywhere. We learned that in the case of Gigi, if you remember, that case came out of Gloucester, Virginia, which went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court over transgender issues. And what's really alarming is that the lesson out of this, and we saw it in one of the articles, was Equality Virginia, which is the leading LGBT-supporting organization. This organization, their reaction to what's happening at West Point is, this is why we need clarity in the law all across Virginia. So they view this as, we need this opportunity to actually make this statewide, and that's something we've been fighting for years, so that this doesn't happen in every community in Virginia.
Well, unfortunately, it isn't even that simple, Victoria, because you probably know that one of the number one agenda items for the Democrats coming into the House of coming into control of the House is passing the Equality Act. And this particular incident is probably as good an example of what's going to happen to people all over the country if the Equality Act is passed, where transgender rights, sexual self-identity, my mouth is tripping over the words here, but it would be added to the list of protected classes in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, those two things, gender identity and sexual orientation. And so if that happens, this is going to be the way it's going to be. Every business, every school, and even possibly churches, given we know that the left has no regard for Christian teaching or protecting it in any way. And so just a warning that this is our future if we don't push back now. Victoria, what's the next step? For the Family Foundation, what can you do to help him?
Well, I think you get to the point of we need to be vigilant at the federal, state, and local level to not allow these kind of policies to be put in place and so that we don't end up in these messes. And so people need to be really zoned into the efforts on the federal level. We will be going to session here at the state level in January and be fighting these exact things. And then also be very on guard with your local school boards. We're going to continue to stand by Peter Flaming, and we're going to be there with him as we expect this thing probably to go all the way into court and all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. I would expect a victory out of this, honestly. The law is not supporting what they have done, and we will be there to do that. And folks can stay tuned in with us on this through our website, familyfoundation.org, where you can get email alerts and things that will keep you updated on this case.
Okay, familyfoundation.org for updates on this. Thanks, Victoria Cobb. I appreciate it so much. And let me just say a practical word to all of you. This is an area where we actually still could take back our schools. If you could, in your own community, find out who is on the school board and start running good candidates, you could actually take over those school boards and do something about this. Thank you, Victoria. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You blind guides, straining out a gnat and swallowing a camel. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In an interview with David Rubenstein, retired Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy explained his reasoning when the Obergefell case was before the court. Most will recall this as the case that gave legal sanction to same-sex marriage. In the interview, Kennedy said, "It just seemed wrong to me. Over 100,000 children adopted by same-sex couples couldn't have their parents married." By doing so, Kennedy simply foisted his privately held opinion on the matter onto the entire American Republic without any regard whatsoever to the law of the land or the Constitution. We have an activist judiciary that has weaponized feelings.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. If a single issue delineates the chasm between the worldview of our two major political parties, socialism may be it. Socialism is a rabidly non-conservative view of public policy. It depends on an ever bigger and more powerful government, which involuntarily transfers wealth from those who have to those who don't. Capitalism prefers a smaller government, which transfers responsibility from government to the individual citizen. It depends upon self-reliance rather than welfare dependency. Capitalists believe in the transfer of wealth just like socialists do, only they believe in individuals giving generously and willingly out of their own resources. It's no surprise that 57% of Democrats view socialism positively, while just 16% of Republicans do. Never forget, the bigger the government, the smaller the citizen.
Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Here's Walker Wildman for Redeem Clean Laundry Products.
Not only do you get a great product and you get to obviously clean your clothes, get the stains out and use the multi-surface cleaner to clean your countertops and use the dryer sheets, you're doing all of this and the money's going to support the work of American Family Association.
Redeem Clean Laundry Products were developed by AFA supporters Len Ingram and Jim Duncan to assist in funding the mission of the American Family Association. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made right here in the United States.
The great thing about Redeem Clean is not only is the product great, but it goes to support a great cause, and that is the work of American Family Association.
For clean laundry and a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Visit redeemclean.afastore.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. According to the news outlet Axios, President Trump is considering appointing Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina to be his next chief of staff. He could not make a better or more timely choice. Representative Meadows currently chairs the House Freedom Caucus, which is made up of that chamber's most principled conservatives and strongest supporters of the president. While Mr. Meadows' leadership would be missed in the coming Republican minority, he would be far better positioned to help counter the Democratic majority's excesses from the White House than in the legislature. Most importantly, the president has come to like and trust Mr. Meadows as a brilliant, politically astute, and reliable ally, a combination of qualities that is in very short supply in official Washington these days. Mr. Trump and the nation would be exceedingly well served by a White House chief of staff, Mark Meadows. This is Frank Gaffney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning.
One of my favorite Christmas albums. I play these bumpers every year. I love them, and they energize me, and what a great rejoicing. You know, we have a great God, and in spite of the news, he will not be overcome. I've been spending a lot of time in prayer with the Lord about all that's happening, because I have, quite frankly, you know, I was disappointed. I am continually disappointed in what I see in the headlines, what I saw in the 2018 midterms, the deceitfulness, the wickedness, the things that the left is getting away with, that the wicked are getting away with, the destruction of good people. It's just so hard to take. But I want to say something really personal to you, because in my own prayer with the Lord this weekend, I just, he knows I've been disappointed. I prayed and thought I knew. I actually did. Not that I would have declared it, but I thought I knew. I thought there was going to be some sort of a retribution, a rebuke of the left in that 2018, and there was not. There was maybe in the Senate, but certainly not in the House, and they're continuing to steal seats. The Mark Harris situation in North Carolina is still pending. Hopefully we'll talk about that at more length later, but very disappointing and just gut-wrenching, really, when I see people that I consider actually my friends, not because they're my friends, but because they are champions for this country, take a gut punch. It's just really hard. And I put President Trump in that category, too. Not that he's a personal friend of mine, but he's a friend to us, as he has been the lone person standing out there between us as Americans and our families and really destruction of the country. And I don't think that's an overstatement. He's the only one defending the border. He's the only one bringing jobs back here and stopping the bleed of income for the middle class. He's the only one. I wish he would do more on the moral issues, but see, he's the only one doing anything. It was under him that horrible memo that Barack Obama sent out about forcing schools to embrace transgenderism and gender identity was removed. That was under his direction. So listen, he's worth defending. And when I see them isolating him and targeting him and gleeful about his potential destruction, and don't think that they just want him out of office, they want him destroyed. These things are hard to take, are they not? Really hard to take. And do we not long for justice? Yes, we long for justice. We feel much like the psalmist. Why do the wicked prosper, Lord? Why? And I really thought that there was going to be a widespread rebuke. I didn't realize, you know, I just underestimate the left all the time. All the planning and scheming they do when it comes to, you know, stealing elections and just all of the things. They don't leave a stone unturned, and they've just done a very effective job. And so it's demoralizing, and it was discouraging. And as I was praying to the Lord, I have to confess to him that I was disappointed, maybe in him. And then he reminded me quite clearly that I had trusted him over things that were much more serious and personal to me in the past, that I had verbally affirmed my trust in him in spite of circumstances, chiefly my very sick daughter. And could I not trust him in this? And I have to say to you, yes, I can. I do trust God. And I think the one thing I can see that's happening here as I think through this and transition myself is that I do see that people are much more open to discussions of God, at least in this country, much more open to discussions of God. They see most Americans, many of them that are paying attention, the wheels coming off the bus, and that includes people in Washington who are in the trenches and the front lines, whereas there is a lot of intellectual ability and experience and expertise. It's a powerhouse of talent in that regard. Sometimes God has not been factored into the equation because there wasn't a need, they thought, of his presence or guidance. I see that changing. I see people like really looking to God for the first time and open to hearing about him for the very first time. So God is not wasting this. Of course he can be trusted, because his story is much greater than our circumstances here. And so I just want to say that by way of personal testimony. Of course, I had a couple of other things. I've got so many things to tell you this morning, so I'm just going to jump right in. We talked about the loss of the job by that Christian teacher in Virginia at West Point Academy just a few minutes ago. And across the globe in China, just in the last, as far as I understand, in the last 24 hours, are in the last few days, 100 Christians were snatched overnight in raids of an underground Chinese church. About 100 worshipers at an unofficial church in southwestern China were snatched from their homes or from the streets in coordinated raids which began on Sunday evening. Chinese authorities targeted members of the Early Rain Covenant Church across various districts of Chengdu, the provincial capital of Sichuan, in which appears to be an effort to close down one of the country's most prominent Protestant house churches. Members' personal accounts and cell group discussions on social media channels were blocked at around 9 p.m. on Sunday, while the telephone line of the church was also cut. The homes of the church leaders, including Pastor Yi, were among those raided. Some of them now are being watched by security personnel in their home. Wang, the pastor, Zhang, who was an elder in the church, said he headed to Pastor Wang's home at around 7, but his wife and him were nowhere to be found. His home was ransacked. It was a mess. And so, you know, the underground churches have enjoyed a relative time, decades, I guess you would say, of a wink and a nod at their worship. I've been in many of those house churches, many of them, and worshiped with them and prayed with them. I'll never forget being there right after 9/11 and how they prayed for us because we could not get back home, and they laid hands on us and prayed for our country. I will never forget that. And so now they are under terrible persecution, but they, listen, if they continue the pattern that I saw in them, they will be faithful. They will be a shining example to all of us. But it's not just in China. It's back here at home. There's a story that in Cleveland, December the 2nd, a young Salvation Army worker named Jared Plesic, and you see a picture of him here. He's got tattoos. He looks like he's a member of Antifa. He's got a shaved head, sort of, like just a little bit of hair, a beard, a mustache, and looks like he has tattoos on his neck. He was a Salvation Army worker. He's described, Jared was an employee, youth worker, and church member of the Salvation Army Temple Corps Community Center in Collinwood. Jared died as he lived, sharing God's love. Jared passed away in full Salvation Army uniform with his Bible in hand, leaving home on his day off to volunteer at the Salvation Army's Red Kettle. Police have arrested 27-year-old William Jones in connection with the murder. Plesac was a Bible study teacher. He was sharing the Bible with this William Jones and telling him about Jesus when William Jones shot him, and now he's dead. That's in Cleveland, Ohio. And then this is a story that's not new, but it's a little bit new to me because I have trouble keeping up with every detail. But this is happening in Minnesota. Ramin Parsa, former Muslim Christian pastor and refugee from Iran, was arrested for trespassing after sharing his testimony at the Mall of America. Keep in mind that Muslims have been airlifted into Minnesota. It happened under President Obama, and it was part of the radical transformation. They were purposely moved into Nashville and other red areas of the country. And the Somali population in Minnesota continues to grow. And of course, it's a hotbed of terrorism. So there's certain things you can't do now in Minnesota, and that takes me back to this story. So Ramin Parsa, former Muslim Christian pastor and refugee from Iran, was arrested for trespassing in the Mall of America. This is the story. On Saturday, August 25th, he said, "I was speaking at a church. After the church service, one of the elders and his 14-year-old son offered to show me the biggest mall in North America. We went to the mall, randomly ran into some Somalis. We had a random conversation. They asked me where I'm from. I told them, and the conversation led to whether I was Muslim or not. I replied, 'I used to be, but I'm a Christian now.' They asked me, 'Why did you change?' While he was giving his testimony, another woman, who was not part of the conversation, went and complained to the security. The guard came and said, 'You can't solicit here.' I told them we were not soliciting. He said, 'Bye,' and walked away. After Parsa, the pastor, and his son grabbed some coffee, three guards were waiting for me and said, 'You must leave now. You're soliciting.' I said, 'No, we're not. I was explaining to them that I'm from out of state. I'm here as a guest. I'm here to see the mall.' That's when they grabbed my coffee, handcuffed me, and took me to the underground mall jail. They patted me down, handcuffed me to a metal chair that was bolted to the ground. They refused to give me a water, refused to let me go to the restroom except right before the police came. When I was taken to jail after 3 hours, I was hungry and thirsty. Police didn't even ask me what happened. They just read what the mall told them. Parsa is no stranger to religious persecution. I've gone through this before. In Muslim countries, I was arrested for passing out Bibles. I came to the U.S. as a political and religious, as a Christian refugee." That's not a current story. That happened in the fall. And of course, now we'll see what's going to happen with him. But this is kind of where things are going worldwide. I told you those stories about what's happening in Great Britain. Those two teachers, one in the university, one in a lower school, arrested. It's a war against Christianity. There's no question about it. And so we just have to put on the armor of God and having done all stand. And so that's what we're going to do, right? I want to follow up to our story in France. We talked with Alexandra Pesset last Wednesday, live from Paris. They had more riots over the weekend. But I wanted you to hear this bit of testimony from those yellow jackets. They're the ones in yellow jackets that are part of these disruptions. And as Alex explained to us, there are two other factions that have joined them that are causing the violence. One is the French equivalent to Antifa. And the other is the migrants who live in the camps, or the Muslim migrants who are using this as an opportunity to loot and be violent. But here are the real people of the Yellow Vest movement. Let's listen.
The gilets jaunes that you see in the streets, they're mainly middle class. And they're being bled dry financially. The wealth gap is getting wider, and we've reached a point where there are the very rich and the very poor, and more people are slipping into poverty.
It's not about whether we're happy with this, it's about finding a solution. That's the most important thing.
Retired Gérard is in charge of collecting the tickets. He's stayed well away from the demos in Paris.
We count up how much they're worth and photograph it. One day, perhaps, we'll send the bill to Macron.
Chloe and Sabrina have braved the rain and tear gas in the capital.
We don't need crumbs. We want the whole baguette. We need to eat.
Merci, monsieur!
They're not the only ones struggling.
Now we're going into a terrible time of year because we can't afford Christmas presents for our kids. I'm 51 and it's like we're going back to the time when my dad gave us an orange and some cheese for Christmas. That's what we're back to. It's terrible.
I can hardly stand to hear that. And we have much to pray about, and I think of the scriptures about how the whole earth will be groaning for the returning of the Lord Jesus. And I recognize that we are not, the Chinese brothers are probably suffering the most overt, second to Muslim Christians in the Middle East who are being beheaded and rounded up, which has been happening now for the last, 15 years or so? Before that, I know, but on the world stage, probably accelerated. And so we have China, and now we see Western Europe, the oppression of people that maybe they're not overtly Christian, but they hold those values, and some are overtly Christian. You see it, you see the pattern, and it does seem to me that we are beginning to see the whole world groaning. You know, in France, Jews are leaving France left and right because they can't survive. The persecution of Jews in France has become unbearable. And it's happening all over Europe, too, in part because of the Islam influx of Middle Easterners and Muslims who hate them. And so it's just an amazing thing to watch. And is God trustworthy in all of this, or is he not? Yes, he is. Though he slay me, Job said, yet will I trust him. We're not being slain yet, but we've got some fighting to do. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.